Hello and welcome to Birth as We Know It. I am your podcast host, Kiona Nessenbaum. I have experienced birth as a doula, a student midwife, and as a mother of three amazing children with my husband and high school sweetheart by my side. After attending over 130 births, including my own, I've realized that each birth experience is truly unique. So make sure you subscribe and join me every week as we are guided through many different birth experiences through the lens of the storyteller. Please be aware that some of the stories can be triggering to hear, so feel free to pause, take a breath, and come back and listen whenever you're ready. With that said, let's prep ourselves to dive deep and get detailed about what really happens in the birth space. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and has no intention of giving or replacing any medical advice. All advice that is given on the podcast is from the personal experiences of the storytellers. All medical or health-related questions should be directed to your licensed provider. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Birth as We Know It podcast. And if you are tuning in for the first time, welcome. And if you are a continuous listener, welcome back. We are happy to have you. Today, I am excited to be interviewing Jen Hamilton, who is owner of We Welcome Doula and Lactation, and is also primarily working as a birth doula with Jet City Doulas alongside Katie Rose and Mariah Fallon. So welcome, Jen. Thank you for joining the podcast today.
It's so good to see your face.
It's awesome to see your face too. Even though this is an audio only podcast, I love being able to see people when we're actually talking. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and dive right in and just tell us a little bit about yourself and who's in your family.
Yeah. So I am a Northern California kid, although my husband says I can call myself a Seattleite now because I've been here primarily since 95.
Nice, yeah.
With a small sojourn back in California, but I really adapted to like the gray, damp, mossy style here very well. I do not miss the hot Northern California summers at all. My family is myself, my partner in crime, husband, best buddy, forever boyfriend, Ian. We've been married for 26 years.
Nice.
Together for like 27 and a half. Nice. And our three kids, our oldest, Carly, gonna be 24 July 15th.
Beautiful.
Startling. Our middle one, Finn, is 21 and a half, will be 22 in September. And then our youngest, Will, is 20 and a half. Like in our house right now, Carly and Will are home with us. Carly came back home to kind of regroup after she graduated from college. Will is home from his first year at college for the summer and his girlfriend is also here with us just for the summer. So
yeah.
And then, you know, we have normally a puppy, a cat, and a fish. And then we added another puppy, cat, and snake for the summer.
Nice.
It's a whole thing around.
Sounds like a lot of love in that house right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of something in here.
Yeah. Nice.
Dishes, animal fur, yes, and lots of love too.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So today on this podcast, even though you are a birth worker yourself, you're actually going to be talking about your own birth experiences, which I think is awesome, and I'm super excited to hear them. So let's go ahead and just start talking about your first pregnancy. So, and it was with Carly. Carly's your oldest? Mm-hmm.
Carly's the oldest. Yeah.
Awesome. So tell us, were you planning on trying to get pregnant? Was she a surprise? Let us know.
Yeah. She was definitely, a plan. In fact, you know this, you guys, like, we seem like we got together old compared to you and Tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I met Ian when I had just turned 24 and he had just turned 25. I had been in the city for maybe a month. And we were friends for a while, and then we did end up like getting together and getting married. And he was like baby crazy.
Nice.
And my family was all a little bit shocked that we like waited as long as we did after we got married. Okay. But yeah, so she was definitely planned. And like we got pregnant right away, which was wonderful. And that was nice. And not something we took for granted, right? Mm-hmm, because just like it doesn't happen that way for everybody. But I definitely with Carly had the like first trimester crazy fatigue, and the first trimester like I would wake up every morning between 4 and 5 a.m. like ready to knock my own arm off. I was ravenous. And he still laughs about the fact that the thing that I needed to have like in my bedside table were, don't know where this came from, but yogurt covered granola bars.
Oh,
you know, like that was it. And so that was what needed to be in the bedside drawer so I could like wake up, have a snack and sleep until I had to get up for work.
Yeah.
And he was super proud of himself because he went to the grocery store one day and there was a sale. So he bought like, I don't know, 5 or 6 boxes.
Nice.
And came home all proud. And the next morning I was like, I can never eat one of those again.
Oh no.
But yeah, pregnancy with Carly was super, super straightforward, super easy. I worked with midwives. So shortly after Ian and I got married, I started having some like health stuff and I just wasn't feeling great. And so went to the doctor, like lots and lots and lots of self-advocacy, and like my hormone panels came back really funky. And my own mom had started menopause in her early 30s. And so it kind of really shifted things for us because we were just like, my plan had been to, after we were married and like had gotten kind of settled, my plan was to go back to nursing school and eventually become a midwife.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, school can wait because like having babies may not.
Right.
You know, we were lucky to be able to have that option to kind of switch things around. And so, like I said, got pregnant with Carly pretty easily. And then at the time, I was actually working in medical office management, right? Because like that was kind of like my way to keep my toe in things. And I was working at the polyclinic and running an office for a rheumatologist who was fantastic. And when I was there, the polyclinic was sort of shifting how they were doing things. And so I had been there for, I don't know, a year or two at that point. And I was training a lot of the new office managers and front office staff that were coming in. And really enjoying that. And they were basically altering things. So there were going to be like each floor was going to have somebody who kind of oversaw all the front office staff. And so I had applied for that and had gotten the job and was really excited. Nobody at work knew I was pregnant. And we were still in discussion, Ian and I were at home, about how we were going to handle everything. And like the week I found out I got the job, I was at work and he came to pick me up from work and he had like this beautiful bouquet of flowers and everybody was like, oh, that's so sweet that he's here to sell. And I was like, something's up. Like I just knew. And so when I was like four and a half months pregnant, 5 months pregnant, his job transferred him.
Oh no.
Yeah. To California. So it wasn't super far. We were going to be close to home, but I didn't want to transfer my pregnancy care. You know, I was seeing you know, we had made what felt like for us a really good compromise of seeing in-hospital midwives. And so we were working with the midwifery group at Virginia Mason that was at the time doing all their deliveries up at the Group Health Hospital on 15th. Mm. And it just, I knew the group, they were wonderful. I was so happy working with them. And I just said, like, we'll do this after the baby comes. So we moved with a 1 month old, and I don't know if that was better or worse, but really loved my care with the midwives. This whole group of like wonderful, really caring, really knowledgeable providers. And like our appointments were like 45 minutes, an hour long, right? It really, that program, they really did, I felt like, had the best of both worlds, right? Where we had time to really develop that deep relationship that is such a benefit of midwifery care, and also the peace of mind to know, just I guess, that we had that backup, right, of being in the hospital. I think we might have thought more about a home birth, but at that point we were just renting. We lived in this teeny tiny townhouse. You know, it was just one of those where, like, that really felt like in-hospital midwifery just really felt like that was going to be the sweet spot for
good,
us.
Good. Yeah. And I think that's awesome that there was even conversation about compromise. You know, there are some partners out there that are like super firm on not wanting to do one thing or the other. But when there are those relationships that you have where you and your partner can actually talk and discuss what your options truly are, like what you're comfortable with, what they're comfortable with, and making a compromise, I think that's really great. I think it's really important as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. You know, and Ian is not a hospital fan, really. And also just kind of understood, I don't know. It was good to know that there were options out there. And it was interesting because he was never the partner that was like, well, what do you mean you want a midwife, or that feels this way or that way? It was just like, he was like, no, you're the one who knows the stuff. You've done the research about this. So yeah, like, let's do it.
Yeah. So. That's awesome. So with your pregnancy with Carly, did you have any, like, any health issues like gestational diabetes, GBS, or anything like that?
No, we were super lucky. I mean, the hardest thing that I dealt with her, ironically, I also dealt with Will, which was like really tight SI joints and just like pelvic discomfort, which is not uncommon for folks. Although, you know, now being a really experienced doula, I'm like, gosh, I wish I had known about spinning babies then.
Right.
You know, because it is so darn helpful. But I would like, at least once a week as pregnancy progressed, I would like on my lunch hour waddle over from the polyclinic building to like the Nordstrom building on Madison and go to physical therapy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it was just nice to be able to have a lot of options. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's good. Even just having that as a resource, physical therapy is nice. Yes. Some people don't think of that or don't know about it as an option. So I think that's really cool. So let's dive in a little bit to your labor with Carly. How did it start? Did it start naturally, progress naturally?
Yeah. So Carly's due date was July 5th. And my plan had been like, I was just going to work right up until the end. And Ian was a little bit like, as was my mom. And so when I looked at it, it was like, you know, that kind of makes sense. Let me do the end of June, because then it's like the end of a pay period and stuff. It'll just be easier. I had always had the feeling that I was going to go late. And my mom at that point was still a teacher, so had the summers off. And so her plan was to come up for a little bit. And I was like, Mom, don't, like, you could just like wait a little bit. You don't need to. No. She was there July 1st.
Nice.
And I was just like, okay, I guess we're just going to stare at each other for a while. And so I went in for my 41-week visit because I was still pregnant, as I thought I would be. And the midwives were like, you know, your fluid looks a little bit low. And so they did some extra monitoring. It was a Monday morning appointment. And they were like, yeah, you know, we're at 41 weeks. Fluid looks a little low. Baby's okay. But how do you feel about having a baby? And, you know, we were all just like, yeah, let's have a baby. That sounds like a fabulous idea. So they were like, you know, go get some lunch, grab your stuff, meet us at the hospital this afternoon. So
nice.
Yeah. So it was, I was, like I said, that must have been the 12th. And yeah, Carly's birthday is July 15th. So
mm-hmm. That was, yeah. So you started on the 12th and she was born on the 15th. Ooh, I feel like we're missing a little bit of details there. Let's dive into that.
So went in to start the induction, and I truly don't remember if they started the induction with Cervidil or Misoprostol, but I do remember they used some sort of attempt at cervical ripening. Mm. And one of the, whichever midwife was on call, her feedback at that point was, your cervix laughed at that intervention. Yeah. It was just like, nah, not going to do that. So we started Pitocin pretty much right away.
Mm.
And, you know, I think like a lot of people, my plan had been, you know, we had done childbirth ed, we had talked about it, and the plan was like labor as long as we can at home, and then we'll go to the hospital when it's time and we'll have a baby. And my mom is one of five.
Mm-hmm.
Four of them are girls. By the time I was having Carly, every one of them had given birth. And like, you should hear the tales of labor in my family. Like, everybody's labor is ridiculously fast. You know, my brother was born like 17 minutes after my mom got to the hospital. Her sister, one of my aunts with her third baby, was like, they lived quite away from the hospital, and she was actually a nurse at the hospital where she was delivering, and her doc was like, you just let me know when we're breaking your water. And like, my cousin was born within the hour, right? Her third baby. So I have this idea about what labor is going to look like, and starting with an induction was not on that list,
right?
And having Pitocin was not and learning during that Pitocin induction that I was allergic to morphine.
Oh no.
Was not on that list.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. How did that, like, how did that impact the rest of your labor?
Yeah. So it was one of the nights I, you know, was on the Pitocin, and I couldn't sleep because I was contracting and often enough and with enough intensity that I couldn't get to sleep and stay asleep. And so, you know, we see it less, but, you know, morphine as like part of a therapeutic rest protocol is still used quite a lot, right? Especially if it's early in labor. And so that was the choice, right? And morphine is preferred for therapeutic rest because it's pretty easy to turn things around, right? With like Narcan, if mom or baby isn't handling things well. And so they gave me morphine, and I was great for about an hour, 45 minutes. And then I just started vomiting. And I feel like it was like 12 hours.
Oh, no.
And it couldn't have possibly been that bad, right? And I'm sure I had antiemetics and all that. But yeah, it was an unpleasant discovery in the middle of labor.
Yeah.
So A big issue with my labor with Carly was the fact that pretty quickly after Ian and I got married, I had had an irregular pap smear that had showed some precancerous cells. And so I think now what's typically done for that is a LEAP procedure, which has less impact to the cervical tissue than what I had, which is called a cryosurgery, which is where the solution is for, like, to get rid of the precancerous cells, was to, you go into your doctor's office, of course, with no, like, pain medication, because we know that no one cares about women's health, right? No pain medication. And they put a, like, there's an aluminum disc that they put on your cervix, and that aluminum disc, it has liquid nitrogen. And so they freeze your cervix to make it blister up. And then it takes like 2 weeks or something for the tissue underneath to heal and the blister to like pop. And then the theory being that all the old tissue is gone.
Oh gosh, I'm just like cringing over here.
Yeah, Ian took me for that appointment, and it was like, oh, we'll go out to breakfast afterwards. It'll be, and he was like, number one, I could hear you screaming while I was in the waiting room. Number two, you're green. So we're just going to go home and put you to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was awful. And so the issue with the induction and the reason it took so long was that I had, my cervix was basically scar tissue.
Yeah.
From that procedure. And so I started Pitocin Monday night, and they stopped Pitocin Wednesday night.
48 hours of Pitocin.
48 hours of Pitocin in order to efface my cervix.
That it didn't was all open? That happened. No dilation?
No dilation because of the scar tissue.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. So let's dive into that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was intense.
Yeah.
It was intense. My plan was an unmedicated labor. Mm-hmm. My pain medication for Carly's labor was a single dose of fentanyl. I did not have an epidural.
Man, you are a warrior. Oh,
I'm
Lord.
Stubborn.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my heart right now is like, ooh, wee. Okay, so all of that with one single dose of fentanyl. So
Right before she was born, actually.
Where did you go from there?
Yeah, so I was on Pitocin for this whole time, and I was, poor Ian, I feel so bad. I was probably the whiniest laboring person. I was just so annoyed, right? Because I was having all these contractions and it was taking forever, and I was in and out of the bathtub, and the hospital is a terrible place to rest. So like, we had brought movies and we had done all this stuff, but it was like somebody was in our room like every 10 minutes. So, and then of course, God bless our families, because we were young and we were just like, sure, everybody can be around. And like, when I found out I was having an induction, my mom called my dad and was like, come on up. Mm. And so it was literally like, my parents were in and out of the hospital. Ian's mom and sister were in and out of the hospital. My friends were stopping by before they left for, one of my friends got married just like a couple days after Carly was born. So they were stopping to say goodbye before they left for the wedding. I mean, it was just, it was a little bit chaotic. But, you know, I am so grateful for the midwives, because they knew what I wanted and they really protected my space. And when I would get totally discouraged and overwhelmed, I remember like there being points where I was like, just cut this baby out of me. I don't even care. Mm-hmm. And they would be like, well, let's see how things are going. And I remember them literally like bundling me up in the wheelchair with my little Pitocin IV and taking me down to the bowels of the group health hospital on 15th for an ultrasound to double check like my fluid levels. And it was just, I had like really good support, and my poor partner was just like, I don't know how to help. And, you know, that's one of the things that really comes up a lot from Carly's birth, was these kind of really miserable first few days, where, you know, he really felt like we had done our childbirth ed and we had done all these things, and felt like he had come away with this sort of to-do list, right, as the partner for how to support. And the first time he looked at me and was like, hey, babe, how about you try breathing that way that we learned in class? And I just like gave him a look and I was like, how about you don't tell me what to do? And we both just kind of looked at each other and our eyes got really big and we were both like, uh-oh, where do we go from here? Right. And I did get to the point where I was able to say to him, like, I don't want you to coach me. I just need you to like sit in the suck with me, because this just sucks. And I just need you to be like, I know this sucks. And he was like, once we got to that point, he felt like he was doing all the, all the right things. But I think he still feels a way that is really common for even the families I work with as a birth worker, right? That as care providers, as doulas, as childbirth educators, we can only give you a general idea of what we generally expect to happen, right? It's all average, and no one's labor is average. It's your own labor. But we can't possibly prepare you for all the ifs, whats. You know, as a doula now, I spend a lot of time, like, you know, if any of our clients are having an induction, we're like, okay, we're going to, let's hop on a call. Let's talk through what this might look like, where decision points would be, when we'll join you, you know, all that sort of stuff. But at the time, you know, we didn't hire a doula, stupidly, before Carly was born. So it was all like, we didn't have the informational support we could have walking through that process.
Sounds like you had a lot of good family support with people coming in and out of the hospital, but at the same time, not that, like you just mentioned, that educational or informational support to help you on that journey, because lots of people were coming in and out being like, oh my God, I love you. Congratulations, you got this. But what about
And also, like, when is this baby coming?
Right. Yeah. How much longer do you think it'll take? Can I see them before, you know, I leave? Which I imagine put a little bit of pressure on you, kind of like this performance of, oh, well, they'll be out shortly, when really you're like, I have no idea. I'm just going with the flow, you know? Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it was interesting because I say, like, we didn't hire a doula. And people are probably like, wait a minute, this child is about to turn 24. Yes. And pre-internet, doulas were harder to find, but they did exist. And I knew that they existed because a couple of years before Carly is born, I had actually gotten to go to a friend's birth, because she knew that I wanted to be a midwife. And so I had actually gotten to be there to see her second baby be born, which it was one of those, perhaps we could have waited less long to get to the hospital. Because I got to the hospital about 5 minutes after they did. And I was like, I'm here for so-and-so. And they were like, in room three, pushing. And I was like, no, they just got here. And they were like, I was like, oh my God. And literally, I opened the door to her room and she was still in her street clothes. Hadn't even had that chance to change. We know, we've been to these births, right? Yes. And I walk into like a baby's head emerging. And I was just like gobsmacked. But they had a doula for that birth, and it was the first time I had ever met a doula. And I remember that Christina gave everyone chocolate and just was that like such this calming presence in the room. And I was like, oh my, I don't know what this job is, but it's magical. So yes, I had seen a birth before and I knew what a doula was, but it was still like, no, like so many first-time parents, no, Ian and I have got this. So finally, after 48 hours of Pitocin, I was as fully effaced as I was going to get. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it was Wednesday night. I had been in the hospital since Monday, mostly in my room, because when I tried to walk the hallways, they were like, your footsteps are too thuddy and we can't hear the baby. Oh. So you can't walk the halls. And I was
like, oh man.
Okay. So this is the craziest thing, and no one believes that this actually happened, but the midwives unhooked me from the Pitocin, mm-hmm. like unhooked me from everything, and were like, leave for a couple, like go take a walk outside, go get some fresh air, just go for like an hour. And it was like, oh, like, got to breathe fresh air, got to be outside, went to Safeway to restock on lemonade and chocolate milk, because for some reason, those were the things I desperately needed to have constantly in labor. And then we came back and we slept. They were like, we're going to give you the night off. And they did. So no Pitocin, no nothing for that.
No monitoring or anything?
They might not have been monitoring, because I wasn't on any medication, right? Mm-hmm. And certainly I wasn't being monitored when I was out.
Right.
So I think they may have really just let me sleep, which was such a gift. And then they had said, in the morning, Michelle, who is the midwife with the magic fingers, is going to come in and see you. And so she did a cervical massage. Mm. To break up all the scar tissue. And what was interesting is that I am really sensitive to certain things. Like, I've had IUDs put in. I've had like cervical biopsies. I don't even like pap smears because I feel like I feel everything. But for whatever reason, that morning my cervix was on vacation and Michelle kept going, are you doing okay? And I was like, I'm fine. She was like, are you feeling this? And I was like, I mean, I can feel you're like doing an exam, but, and I'm so grateful that I didn't feel any of that. Because
cervical massages are no joke. I have been at the bedside of clients who have needed cervical massages for the same reason of, you know, releasing some cervical scar tissue. And let's just say it's not a blissful experience.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I got that feeling. from her and from the nurses, but that piece was actually fine. And I think that combined with what the Pitocin had done, I don't remember if they said I was 4 centimeters or 6 centimeters after she was done with the massage.
So what was your dilation when she started? Did you know?
Zero.
It was zero. There was nothing. Yeah, and then how long was she doing the cervical massage for?
Maybe 15 minutes.
That's a juicy amount of time though, still to be all up in there, you know?
Yeah. And I think it might've been off and on. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe it was only 5. I don't know.
But did
the cervical massage, and then, just breaking up the scar tissue. It was like, oh, there's a lot of progress with dilation that just couldn't happen because of the scar tissue.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I was really, really grateful for that. And then my body, they may have given me a little whiff of Pitocin to kind of kick things into labor. And I may have been on a very low, low dose, like literally like 1 or 2 throughout the day, but then my body just really kicked into labor on its own. And, my like cervix was actually finally prepared to move and change, right? With all this like, days of prep work. And so I remember feeling like I was like really like laboring or like feeling contractions on my own in earnest by about like 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. And Carly was born at 3:17 that afternoon.
Nice.
So once I was able to get into labor, it was pretty darn efficient. I spent a lot of time laboring in the bathroom because my room was full of people. Mm-hmm.
You needed your birth cave.
I did. I so needed my birth cave. So it had been a long few days. And I feel like finally at about 2:30 in the afternoon, I was just exhausted. And mm-hmm. I remember looking at my nurse and saying, I can't do this anymore. I'm so tired. And she said, how do you feel about a time, like a micro dose of fentanyl, just to give you a little bit of help and see if that eases things? And I was like, okay. She's like, we're just going to put it into your IV. It's going to last for about 20 minutes and then we can reevaluate, but you haven't had any breaks at all. And I was like, okay. And she put it in my IV and I was like, I don't feel it. She said, there's a loop in your IV. Just drop your hand. And again, this was over 20 years ago. And Ian still talks about the look on my face when the fentanyl hit, but I was just like, oh, it was like the best beer buzz I'd ever had.
Yeah.
And it was such blissful relief. And then like 20 minutes later, I was like, okay, can I have some more now? And she said, actually, we need to check and see where you are. And so I got on the bed and she was like, you can't have any more because it's time to have a baby.
Nice.
And I was like, not amused.
Yeah. Yeah. Not amused because you couldn't have it, but... it's time to have a baby. You've reached the point of no return.
Truly. And so I remember feeling like pushing Carly out took forever, but it took, I think, 25 minutes. And
nice.
I was just so tired overall that I can remember this point where the midwife who delivered her, her name was Molly. And Ian was holding one leg and my dad was holding the other leg. And then there was Molly at the end of the bed. And behind Molly were my mom, my mother-in-law, my sister-in-law, and Ian's aunt, my mother-in-law's sister. Yeah. Full on peanut gallery. And I remember at one point being like, I can't do this anymore. And Molly being that, like, reach down and touch her baby's head. And I was like, what are you talking about? Reached out and I was like, wait, what? And it was like Carly, it was fully like,
yeah,
you know,
it like was out there
starting to crown.
Yeah.
It was wild. It was absolutely wild. And so then there she was. It
nice.
Was super crazy.
So would you say Molly suggesting to touch her head gave you that extra boost that you needed to finish?
Oh my gosh. Yes, so much.
Good.
So much. And it is actually one of my favorite go-tos as a birth worker, right? Because it's so easy to feel discouraged or to flag during that point in time, especially if it's been a long, long labor to get there. And so that was really motivating.
Awesome.
Really motivating. And then one of the things that was funny after Carly was born was that my mother-in-law a couple days later was like, I have a confession to make. And I was like, yes. And she was like, I took some pictures while Carly was being born and I can just throw the film away. I don't have to. And I was like, no, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was like, we have pictures of her birth, which is super special. Yeah. So we had a baby and it was wonderful until it was like time to feed her. And one of the nurses that was in the room was like, wait a minute, that nipple's flat and that one's inverted. How are you going to feed this baby?
Oh, no. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this baby is 10 days late. Why are we just having this discussion now?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that is a huge part of the reason why I'm an IBCLC.
Right. Yeah. That's a good.
Right.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. And a huge part of the reason why every client I work with, we have a discussion and an exam prenatally. And I'm very clear about the fact that it's information gathering, right? I can't predict how this is going to go because birth can have such big influences. And honestly, it's all about the dyad, right? I can't look at one half of the equation and project into the future what this is going to look like because I don't know what baby is showing up.
Right.
The baby is a huge part of the team.
Right.
So, but I just think about how much less panicky I would have been if I had had someone like talk me through like, okay, this is what your anatomy is like. And for some babies, a flat nipple and or an inverted nipple is a big deal. And for some babies, they're not. But if they are a big deal for your baby, these are the tools that we might use to help us.
Right. So where did you go from there? How was feeding? Was it challenging? Did you have any?
It was really challenging. Really challenging to start. So in the hospital, honestly, you know, looking back on it now, right, with the knowledge I have now, I think if I had had an averter, that probably would have been enough. But I didn't have that. So I remember being offered breast shells, which are, we can put a link in there if anybody wonders what breast shells are, but they are kind of, they have like a plastic front and kind of a silicone back. And so the idea is that you can actually wear them prenatally as well as after baby is here. But the idea is kind of that wearing that between your body and your bra is gonna, that silicone is gonna put pressure on your tissue and help kind of pop out the nipple. So I remember they gave me those to wear in between feedings, and they gave me nipple shields to feed her. And nipple shields can be a really good tool. I, you know, use them in a lot of cases. But I think the hard part was that I kind of left the hospital with these things, and it was like, then I was really on my own. I don't remember having good resources for lactation follow-up. So I just fed Carly the best I could. I remember, like, she was born on a Thursday. I think we went home on Saturday, because that was so long ago that you still spent 2 days in the hospital after a vaginal birth and four after a cesarean. And I think I remember my milk came in on Sunday. You know, in spite of a really long labor and in spite of like having some struggles with nursing, you know, my full supply coming in was on time. There were never any concerns about her weight, as far as I remember. And we did eventually figure it out, but like I went through like the nipples, just being, my nipples were so destroyed. I remember one time feeding her and like her pulling off the nipple and me looking at her and like her having like blood.
Oh, on her lips?
On her mouth. Yeah. Oh. And it was from my nipples.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds so painful.
It was really brutal. And add to that the chaos of, as I mentioned before, Ian got transferred. And so the deal was that we had to be in another state with when our baby was a month old. So it was a lot. And then also a lot was the fact that because of the job change, and it was our first baby and my mom was there. So like Ian went back to work pretty early, which was hard. And then my mom did the best she could. And she hadn't had the support of her mom when I was born, because her mom also had a five-year-old. Right. So like, I think, as was not uncommon, like a couple generations ago, my mom's one of five kids, but they're spread out over 19 years.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. So like families had a much longer like generational span, and they had, you know, and people had babies for, I feel like, a longer period of time. A lot of the times, you know, she really did the best she knew how to support me. But I mean, if you think about where the Seattle Children's Emergency Room is compared to University Village, and then think that I walked there and back within the first week postpartum.
Was it for support, lactation support?
No, it was because my mom was like, well, we should get out and do something. It's such a nice day. And Ian was back at work, and so he had the car. Yeah. So there were some really great parts and some tough parts.
Yeah.
With Carly, we did end up figuring nursing out eventually.
Good.
And I breastfed her till she was 16 months old.
Nice.
And would have kept going if it wasn't for other issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome. So. That's really, really great. Let's go ahead and dive into your conception period and pregnancy with Finn. How was that?
Yeah. It's funny, as anybody I think who has a toddler knows, right? And is wanting another baby. So keep in mind that we get told if we're exclusively breastfeeding our children, we won't have our period.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah, I am that person who exclusively breastfed my babies and got my period back at 6 weeks postpartum with every single one. So it seemed like when we started trying, when Carly was 10 months old, like this would be no problem.
Mm-hmm.
And instead it was like every single month, like, nope, period, nope, period, nope. So I figured probably the best bet was to wean Carly, right? Mm. I mean, she was 16 months. She was definitely nursing morning, night, and like for comfort throughout the day. But yeah, it wasn't. She's a good eater, you know, it wasn't the primary source of her food. And I like loved our nursing relationship, but I also really wanted to have another baby. So mm-hmm. I went out of town for a couple days, came back. I think she nursed once and was like, yeah, okay.
Nice. I'm done. Yeah.
Okay. So the weaning process was pretty easy with her. And then, you know, as toddler parents, it was like, we knew exactly when Finn was conceived. It was like one night.
Right.
And sure enough, I weaned Carly in early December and knew I was pregnant like shortly after New Year's.
Nice. Yeah.
And then, you know, again, like the actual pregnancy with Finn was really easy. Really easy.
So no health concerns or anything with Finn either.
No,
good.
None. What was challenging was the external world and the impact it had on that pregnancy. So it was one of the things that I struggled with a lot when I became a birth worker, was that I feel like, you know, when I started birth work in 2016, I feel like at every conference I went to or every continuing education event, we talked about epigenetics. Mm-hmm. I feel like that was a really big time for learning about how environment impacts genetics.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I was pretty early in my pregnancy with Finn, and my grandmother, who was like, both of my grandmothers were like my special people, mm-hmm. right? And I had lost my grandfather in college. And so this was my dad's mom, who was incredibly special in my life. I did have a chance to tell her I was pregnant with Finn before she died, but she died pretty early in the pregnancy. And Ian was, he works in tech. He's always worked in tech. And this was kind of like right as the tech bubble was starting to burst. And he works on the international side of things. And so that is one of the areas that kind of quickly folds when companies are trying to figure out how to streamline and stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had gotten laid off. So we were really struggling. Another really weird thing, and I should clarify, so we were in the Bay Area. We had this lovely little house that we rented from the parents of friends of ours that was like backed up to the hills, and you could hear the cows mooing, and it was really lovely. It was amazing, but it was shocking to me the difference in maternity care. Because being here in Seattle, the idea of having a hospital midwife was like, duh.
Right.
Even in 1999, it was like, yeah, you can have an OB, you can have a midwife in the hospital, whatever. And when we went to the Bay Area, it was like, no, 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 midwives are for home births. And it was like, okay, well, once again, we're renting our house. I also know I had to have an induction last time, so I'm not quite sure what's going to happen this time. I think a midwife in hospital worked for us last time, and that's what we want to do this time. And we had to drive. The one place that that was an option was at Lucile Packard Children's Hospital at Stanford. And so we drove a minimum of 45 minutes for every, each way, for every single midwife appointment. because it was the only place.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can only imagine, like, even though that's a quote unquote simple or small aspect of your care, that costs money. Mm-hmm. With having your husband laid off and struggling already, and then driving 45 minutes each way with gas on top of whatever insurance coverage you may or may not have anymore if you were on your husband's insurance. So yeah.
We were paying more for Cobra than we were for our rent.
Oh, God. Cobra is the worst. It's the worst. Yeah. Anyways.
But we also were like, we're pregnant and we have a baby. Right. Like, we can't not have insurance.
100%. Yeah.
It was a lot. It was a lot. And so, you know, there was all of this going on. And finally, like, literally last minute, like, this was May. And if he didn't have something by June, we were going to have to move in with my parents who lived 4 hours away. Mm-hmm. He got a contract job.
Nice.
So it was like, oh, thank God. So we could stay in the Bay Area. And so that was really, really awesome. But again, a lot of stress. But he found a contracting job, and then we found a doula.
Nice.
For this birth, which was hilarious because, again, pre-internet. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of like, I don't even remember where I found a list. Like, it was a physical list.
Yeah.
And like, interviewed a couple of people that had room in their schedule around Finn's due date. And it was hilarious because the first doula was from Santa Cruz, and she was all about, like, the crystals and a little bit older and super hippy dippy. And I kind of loved her.
Yeah.
And Ian was like, I can't spend 3 days with her. Just like thinking back to Carly's birth.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, babe, I totally feel that. Let's keep it.
Yeah.
It was so cute.
Oh, yeah. And,
you know, another aspect that was really interesting was the doula that we ended up hiring. I can remember her asking me, like, about things that I might like in labor. And I just remember being like, I don't know, because I had an induction last time. So I don't know. I can tell you what I felt like with my induction, but I don't know how I'm going to feel about labor this time, because of course it's going to be different this time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that was really interesting. And then as we were, like, approaching Finn's birthday, Finn was due August 30th. And, like, Ian's sister came down to spend some time at the end of August, and her health was not good at that point in time. So that was kind of stressful to have, like, eyes on her and make sure she was doing okay. And then, like, talking to his mom, who was stressed out that she wasn't there. And then they ended up kind of swapping, like, his sister went home and then his mom came down. You know, my birthday is September 6th. I did not get a baby for my birthday.
Oh, my birthday is September 6th too, by the way.
Hello, birthday buddy.
Hello, birthday buddy. But yeah, so that is 1 week post due date.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I was so determined that things were going to be different this time. Mm-hmm. And that I was going to be able to do it. And God bless the midwives, who were amazing. They had me come in for NSTs every couple days to keep an eye on things. And they were like, we will let you go until 42 weeks. Mm. And then we need to get this baby here. Mm-hmm. Finn's birthday is September 14th of 2001. Mm. So September 11th was the day that my mother-in-law was supposed to fly back home to Seattle. Mm-hmm. And Ian called me and said, something weird is going on. And Carly, like, had crawled into bed with me. She was 2, and she crawled into bed with me, and we turned on the TV and saw the second tower. And
gosh.
So I called him back and said, you may as well turn around and come home, because your mom's not going anywhere today. And so that was really, I mean, it was a strange time anyway, and it was a really strange time to be, like, balancing all of these big feelings, right?
Yeah.
So Ian brought his mom back to the house, but by, like, early afternoon, he actually went into work, because all the discussions had already started and things were kind of being put together. And in the Bay Area, especially, we already started to see a lot of violence toward brown skinned people who looked like they might be from the Middle East-ish, which, you know, the Bay Area is like huge for tech. So there, yes, there are people from all over the world, but like that time was just crazy. It was like Sikh people were experiencing all sorts of violence because Sikh people wear turbans. I mean, it was just such an awful time on so many levels. And then here's my mother-in-law who's super anxious that she can't get home to her other child who is having health issues. And, you know, I'm now very overdue with this baby. So there's a lot of big, big feelings and a lot of big stuff going on. So, and we were trying literally like everything that was okayed by the midwives to try to induce labor on our own. Like Ian's like rubbing evening primrose oil on my cervix every night.
Yeah.
Insanity.
Yeah.
Right? I'm pumping. It was like everything we could think of and nothing would work. And so we ended up going in the night of September 13th, which was, I was then like, that was, I was 2 weeks late and going in for another induction. So we got settled at Stanford and again, just such a weird time.
Right.
Right. To be in the hospital and trying to really be at all focused on what was going on with like all this heaviness in the world. And so they started the induction with Cervidil and I fell asleep. And the next thing I remember was the lights coming on and many, many people rushing into our room. And like somebody like yelling as people were physically moving me like to get on my hands and knees. And I looked over at the screen and could see that the heart rate, Finn's heart rate was at 40. And so like I was not a birth worker, but I knew enough to know that was not good. I mean, that's 100 beats per minute less than it should be.
Right.
And, you know, we often talk about, you know, and again, a lot of credit to Penny Simpkin, who we were talking about earlier, who really is like, no, what happens in a birth space matters. And people carry this forward with them. This is not just another day for birthing families. Right. And again, as we know, as birth workers, that the person who is going, right, the birthing parent has their experience and often the partner has a different experience.
100%.
Right. Yes. Because of who's living it and who's seeing it. And I remember being on all fours and looking over and having that realization that this, I'm watching this baby die, is what I was processing in my brain. And, whoever was at my right arm was giving me a shot of terbutaline to stop the contractions. And I kind of gasped and they said to me, don't cry. It's not going to help anything.
Rude. Oh God, no.
And like, this is over 20 years later. And I remember that. I mean, I can hear that voice in my head.
I'm sorry.
You know, like just the things we say matter. And I understand that whoever it was, the medical professional, was probably completely scared about the situation, but that's not an excuse for the way we talk to families.
Right, right. With an emergency situation still happening, it's that medical provider who had said that to you was trying to fix the problem, but they added to the problem. Because where's your emotional stability supposed to be if the person that's helping, quote unquote, helping you at that time, putting you down and being like, basically saying, shut up, don't do anything. It's not going to help, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. And our doula wasn't there because we were having an induction and the agreement was when things happened, we would be in touch. Mm-hmm. And Ian had been asleep as well.
Mm.
Right. And so he woke up to like this crowd of people surrounding his wife and some stranger like reaching up inside me to try to like see what was going on. So, and that's like a really hard one for us because it's always been like the kind of the two of us against the world. You know what I mean? For lack of a better way to put that, you know, we really lean on each other. Mm-hmm. And even that physical separation, like having him far away from me, because there were all these people in between us and him not knowing what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And me being so scared and like not having his voice, his face, this his smell near me was really scary and isolating.
Yeah, I can only imagine because, you know, that's your partner in crime. Even just that physical reassurance that, okay, we're in this together matters.
Yeah. And this was not a tiny decel. Like, they people screamed in with a stretcher, like, and a crash cart. This was, like, nuts. And then all of a sudden, Finn's heart rate just popped right back up.
Mm.
It was just, like, 7 minutes of terror and chaos, and then all of a sudden there's Finn acting like he's totally fine.
Yeah,
so there was a lot of adrenaline and we recombobulated and eventually settled back down enough, and I was able to call our doula and say, hey, this really scary thing happened and things are calm now, so we're just going to proceed with labor, but I want you to know. And she was a single mom, so I feel like she was like, okay, let me kind of start getting my feelers out for who may be able to come take over here.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, you know, if I need to come in, it was like, okay. And so I do remember that we did get settled down, and I mean, I'm sure that they had yanked the Cervidil and everything. So at that point, I was just on monitoring, right? No medication, probably a saline drip. And at some point, like my body started having some small contractions again. And we had another decel that was not quite as bad, but it was like down to the 60s. And it lasted about 5 minutes.
Mm.
At that point, I remember Elizabeth, who was our midwife, she came in and was like, okay, so let's have a chat. And I just immediately was like sobbing. And I was like, please tell me you're taking this baby out of me.
Because
I cannot watch my body kill my baby. And I don't understand what's going on.
Yeah.
So yeah, we went in for a cesarean, right? Which was the first time I had been in an operating room, which I think is really typical for a lot of people having cesarean. We felt really grateful because things turned quickly enough that we weren't able to, like, we didn't have time to call our doula. This was like, we got to get this baby out. And so our midwife, rather than scrubbing in, played a doula role for us.
Oh, that's nice.
And so that was really lovely to have her there with us, talking us through everything, reassuring us about what was going on. And it was really helpful because Finn did end up having to go to the NICU for a bit. Mm. And so Ian knew that, like, Elizabeth was there with us, which was great. We had the fortunate experience of finding out what the issue was with Finn, which was an occult cord, which is, I guess, what the terminology is for what would be a prolapsed cord, but water was still intact. And so even a small contraction, right, even potentially like a Braxton Hicks, right, where it's just that all over tightening was cutting off their oxygen supply completely.
Wow.
Yeah. So then it's like this crazy thing where you're like, okay, when you really start thinking about that, you're like, okay, so if we hadn't been in a place with monitoring, we never would have known that. If my water had broken, we would have had a cord prolapse.
Maybe that's why he hung on so much and did not start labor on his own, you know?
That's what we always say, that they had a lot of angels. Finn uses they, them pronouns.
And okay.
Yeah. It was just like, which we didn't talk about, but yeah, Finny had a lot of angels.
Yeah.
But then I also had a toddler and a cesarean to deal with.
Ooh, yeah. that postpartum. Postpartum.
Was a lot.
Yeah.
Nursing with Finn was much, much easier, even though Finn had a terrible tongue tie. And so that was an interesting piece of things, because the wisdom at that point in time was, if the baby is gaining okay, if milk transfer is okay, then you don't need to do anything. That was great for that piece of it. But then I ended up with a baby that was a colicky baby.
All that gas.
Yep. When the tongue doesn't work the way it needs to, right? Swallowing all kinds of air, lots of choking with feeding, even with nursing, and then later on with solid foods.
So let's go ahead and dive into your pregnancy and conception experience with Will. How was that? Was it different? What are all the things?
Yeah, it was very different, because that was when I learned that breastfeeding is not always birth control. And so that was how I ended up with a 5-month-old and a positive pregnancy test.
Ah, so it was like opposite of what you experienced with Carly and Will, or sorry, Carly and Finn.
Yeah, with Carly and Finn.
Yeah.
Was, yeah.
How was that?
That was, I cried.
Mm-hmm. For very good reason. Very good reason.
And again, I had always wanted three, and Ian weirdly somehow came around to three, even with a colicky baby. He was like, when are we having another one? And I was like, okay. But it was, again, you just know these things. By that point, he had been hired on full time by the company he had been contracting for. And we were set to move back to Washington.
Nice.
And so we had come to look at houses and find a place to live. And we celebrated and ended up pregnant. So
yeah,
by the time we actually moved a month later, we were having another baby. Things were super smooth with my pregnancy with Will, honestly, other than being a complete and utter surprise. Because I knew he would be a scheduled cesarean, right? Because again, this is his birthday is December of 2002. And so...
So VBAC wasn't even an option on the table because conception was too close.
Right, right. And I feel like that has changed now. Like, I've had clients who have totally been eligible for VBAC with kids, maybe not quite 14 months, but 18 months. And maybe even closer, the issue being that none of those folks have needed an induction, right? Because that's the hardest part with VBAC.
Right.
I feel like.
Too much labor time on that scarring.
And especially if, you know, it's one thing if labor happens on its own, but a whole another thing if labor happens, needs augmentation.
Right.
So we knew we were going to have a scheduled cesarean. And I came back and actually ended up working with one of the polyclinic OVs because I had known her from a few years before working there on staff there. And it was fabulous because she honestly was the most laid back provider for somebody having their third baby and was just like, I don't know, you tell me what's going on.
Right, right.
But in a really good way. One of the things that was funny was that I looked massively pregnant. I swear to God, within minutes of finding out I was pregnant, because bodies are just like, yeah, we know what happens. I gained 9 pounds my pregnancy with him. That was it.
Wow. Good.
But I looked, and it wasn't because I was trying, I was eating constantly, but I was chasing
right.
I had a baby and a toddler at home, but I looked hugely pregnant by the time I was 3 months pregnant. And then Finn did end up going on a nursing strike at 10 months, and we never got back on the breastfeeding. So that kind of stunk, but now... Again, looking through my lactation consultant hat, I'm like, oh, yeah, that was right about the time where my milk would have really been trying to transition back to colostrum for my pregnancy, where I was in my pregnancy. And Finn was probably like, this is garbage.
Yeah.
I've heard that now from families who have older nurslings, right? But at that transition point, they are very not fans.
Right.
So, but other than that, yeah, things with Will were super smooth. He was a 39-week scheduled cesarean. Easy peasy, breastfed like a superstar.
Nice. Any tongue tie?
Nope.
Nice. So Finn was your only tongue tie baby?
Yeah, interestingly.
Yeah.
So with Will, honestly, the hardest part was having to heal from a cesarean with, again, a 3.5-year-old and a 14.5-month-old who was not walking.
Mm. Sounds like Finn was on strike for a lot of things.
Finny, God no bless walking. Them, is, I know, like the sweetest human being in the world.
That's
and
great.
Oh, dear God.
Finn was on their own time.
Yes, 100%. And then the big piece that was kind of the thread running through things that we haven't talked about is perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. Mm-hmm. So with Carly, I really felt like I was doing fine. Mm-hmm. And the thing that was interesting was I took me a long time to feel like it was safe to fall in love with her. Because I was always afraid something really bad was going to happen to her. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know. I didn't know what that was. And I eventually got past it and everything was great.
Right. But it was your first experience. It was your first baby. So yeah.
Yeah. After Finn was born, like we've talked about the stress leading up to their birth. When Finn was 3 weeks old, my parents split up. Mm. And so more stress and drama and a lot. And so I ended up going to therapy.
Yeah.
Which was super helpful. And had considered actually starting medication because I was really struggling and then found out I was pregnant with Will. Mm. So ended up not going on medication, but did know that postpartum anxiety was a thing. Like I said, we moved back to Washington when I was maybe 6 weeks pregnant with Will. So had all my care back up here in Seattle and found an amazing therapist who really helped me out through the pregnancy and through postpartum and really helped me understand like how we look at postpartum mm-hmm. and perinatal mood disorders and how we evaluate treatment for them, not so much based on like how much medication is going to get in my milk, how much medication is the baby getting, but rather instead looking at it from the lens of what does a parent with untreated perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, what does that look like for a child to grow up in that environment versus a parent who has treatment?
Right. Two very different worlds.
Yeah. And so, you know, just having someone that I was trusted to talk to about that and who could help me with things, I did end up going on medication when I was breastfeeding Will, and it was great. I had the least mood stuff with him after, for sure. And nice. Then also having that constant of therapy and the introduction to therapy, really, once I was through the postpartum period, it was like, by that point, had a really established relationship and was like, oh, this is not just related to mm-hmm. pregnancy.
Right.
This is a thing for me.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I would necessarily like where the push would have been if it hadn't come from my postpartum experience with Finn. So I'm grateful for that too.
Yeah. 100%. I think that's amazing. I think that all three of your experiences are so different. It sounds like lots was learned along the way.
Yeah.
With each and every pregnancy and birth experience. And like I've said in previous episodes before, that just goes to show that each pregnancy is different. Each baby is different. For example, Finn has a tongue tie and your other babies don't. And, mm-hmm. You know, everything is different. And you had mentioned previously in the episode how your family's birth stories were and like how different mm-hmm. they are from yours. And you know, as a birth worker, I have sometimes said to clients, you know, if this is your first birth experience, you can sometimes listen to how your mom's birth or your grandmother's birth was. And that could potentially be something of what your birth may look like. But there were things that you were experiencing that your, you know, relatives have not experienced. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show how different everybody truly is. And even though you could potentially look at something as a possible way of which your birth will be, it's not always going to be that way because there are so many things that are out of our control. And we just got to go with the flow, like all of the external things that are happening in our lives at that moment.
So,
thank you so much for sharing your stories with me, Jen.
You're so welcome.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be able to like hear them all and just share and spread all of these amazing experiences, amazing, hard and challenging experiences with all of my listeners. But let's go ahead and close off this episode with just a few questions. One of the first questions is, what's one piece of advice you would give to families as they are preparing for labor and birth and going into parenthood?
The biggest one is, you know, obviously flexibility, because they're just, we truly never know how things are going to go. Right. And we don't really have much say over it. But the other thing that I really talk with families about a lot is concept of listening to your gut. Because I think our culture is not a culture that embraces our inner wisdom.
Right.
That is not, there is no value placed on the things that we know intuitively. And I think that when we are talking about pregnancy and postpartum and early parenting and evolving into like parenting bigger kids, like you being able to tap into that innate feeling in your body about what is right for you and what is right for your family, and like knowing, being open to the messages that your brain or your body or your ancestors have to send you is just so hugely important. And it is something that we don't practice.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely not commonly practiced. And it's also commonly ignored, depending on where your what your support team looks like. So that's a really good piece of advice, is to listen to those innate feelings that you have.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is a practice, right? And I think it's especially even more of a practice now, because I feel I have so much empathy for folks who are birthing and parenting right now with so much technology and so much access to the world at your fingertips, because everybody has an opinion. Really also trying to literally sitting and spending time being like, okay, what is anxiety talking? What is worry talking? What is the rest of the world imposing on me? And really trying to filter through those layers about like finding out where your authentic center as a person, as a parent are. It's like, you can spend lifetimes doing that.
For sure. The next question I have is, what's one resource that we can share to the listeners on your behalf outside of course, you know, Jet City Doulas and We Welcome Doula and Lactation.
Perinatal Support Washington.
Yes. Yeah. I was trying to remember the name.
P.S. Yeah. Perinatal Support Washington is local. Incredible. They keep expanding programs that are amazing. They now have in-house therapy training. They have managed to make it so they can take Medicaid for perinatal mental health therapy. They are have specialists in certain populations, right? Where it's like queer therapists and BIPOC therapists, and the majority of their therapists are like there because of perinatal experiences of their own. It's just like, I cannot say enough about the resources that program has to offer, and the warm line, and expanding that to partners, because
That's
it's
great.
not just birthing people who suffer with perinatal mood and anxiety disorder. We are incredibly lucky to have that resource.
Yes, we are.
And then also folks.
Right. So folks is specifically for families of color that want to connect with other families of color on their parenting journeys, birthing journeys, and all that. So to be able to relate to all that with each other.
And also families that are mixed, they have, you know, which I think can be like incredibly supportive for both partners. I've like heard that from families I've worked with who have done those programs. So I think we're lucky to have a lot of good parent support. It's just a matter of knowing where to find it.
Yeah, exactly. So the last question I'm going to ask you is our final question for the interview, which is, what is one word that you would use to describe your overall experiences? I know that it's hard because you have three very different ones, and you have developed a lot of your own career off of your experiences and your schooling. So,
yeah, I've actually been thinking about this a lot because I knew you were going to spring this on me. And honestly, I think it's formative, because when I look at the experiences I had, it did form so much of my lens, mm-hmm. and informed so much of who I am as a birth worker, right? Mm-hmm. Just as far as knowing that we have to be flexible, and also really and truly confirming that I had three vastly different births. Mm-hmm. I had three births that people could be like, those are traumatic.
Yeah.
I mean, even the last one, which was like, yeah, we just had a planned cesarean. But for some people, that's like their worst outcome they could imagine.
Yeah. Yeah.
That with the right support, any birth can be a positive experience.
Yep.
Because each of those births was so amazingly positive. Yeah. There were whacked out parts of all of them. Mm-hmm. But when it came down to like how I felt, I knew that everybody was there for us and for our baby.
Yeah.
For Ian and I and for our baby, and to ensure to the best of their ability that we were emotionally in our little like bubble that protected the ability to have a joyful celebration of our babies.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's such a perfect word.
I feel incredibly lucky that those were our experiences.
Good.
Yeah. And I think proof too that like people can say something really crappy to you that you remember two decades later, but yeah. When that was a blip on the radar, mm-hmm. instead of the overarching way things unroll, mm-hmm. it makes a difference.
It does. And that's a really common thing that Penny Simkin focuses on, or like brings attention to throughout her trainings and her education courses or curriculum, is that the way that you are treated during the labor, the way that you are cared for during your labor experience, has an impact on how it's remembered many years later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And an impact on beyond that, right? Your bond with your child, mm-hmm. how you parent. I mean, it really, yeah. So grateful to Penny for bringing that to the forefront. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Check out PennySimpkin.com. Penny's website's still there with all of her research and her book.
Yeah. I'll add that to the show notes too.
Yeah, maybe one of my doula partners, you know,
someone named Katie.
Katie Rose maybe did an awesome job with the birth partner and making it inclusive. And I feel really lucky that, you know, like you, I had a chance to intern with Penny early in my doula career. And mm-hmm. what a special, special person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, thank you so much, Jen. I really appreciate it. Thank you again.
Yeah, thank you so much. And again, thank you for the podcast. I told you that like the twins episode just like was so perfect. And I did send it to our twins mom while she was waiting. I don't know if she got a chance to listen to it or not, but it was just awesome. So thank you for doing the podcast. It's fabulous and fascinating to listen to other people's stories and how they end up impacting things down the road.
Interviewing Jen for this episode was amazing. She brought so many points to the table that not many people think about, which is how the outside world impacts how you can labor and how not each labor and birth are the same. And how when you go expecting your labor and birth to be how your family's has been, it's not always how it goes for you. I'm excited to say that next week I had the opportunity of interviewing Anissa Gusti. She talks about her personal birth experiences and some decisions that she had to make throughout her conception period. She also talks about her near-death experience that ended up in emergency hysterectomy. So tune in next week to get the details on that. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode today. Don't hesitate to share this with your family and friends. If you liked this episode, feel free to leave a review so my podcast can pop up for others and they can see and listen to it as well.
If you have a birth story or experience you would want to share on the Birth As We Know It podcast, head over to KionaNessenbaum.com and fill out the guest request form. That is KionaNessenbaum.com. I look forward to connecting with you again soon. Bye for now.